Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to Overnight America. Another night that feels like every other night. Somehow it's just blurring together. But somehow we find new things to talk about. We got a lot on the show tonight, and I always like the 8 o'clock starts because it gives us a little bit more time to schedule more guests in there, and we have one by the name of Jim Rossenberger. He's the author of a Sam Colt biography called Revolver. Now, you know the name Colt, synonymous with firearms, and you think about the history of weapons in the United States and the guns. Revolver is an interesting look at Sam Colt and the six shooter that changed America. So we're going to talk to him about really the lasting effect that Sam Colt has had. And wouldn't you like to have some memorabilia from him? Whenever I watch Pawn Stars, every once in a while, there's a one that comes in there, and they always are starstruck when they get to see a authentic revolver there from Sam Colt. So that's coming up in about 20 minutes from now. Looking forward to talking to Jim Rossenberger in the next hour. Gene Sperling's director of the National Economic Council under both President Obama and President Clinton. There's a new book that he has out called Economic Dignity. So I feel like I'm going to disagree with him on a lot of different takes, but it's going to be interesting for him to talk about economic dignity. What exactly does that mean? When I hear things like that, I think about some of the popular phrases like universal basic income and, you know, universal health care, things like that, that are really shared among a lot of people on the left, things that they want to see. So we'll let Gene Sperling give the case later tonight, and we'll talk about that coming up with him. Also, Michelle Walker is author of a book called The Gray Rhino, How to Recognize and Act on the Obvious Dangers We Ignore. Now, that's fascinating, too. Well, think about this, the dangers we ignore. And when we walked into this whole pandemic, and for the longest time, how long did China ignore? How long did we ignore the fact that we could have had a pandemic sometime soon? There's people talking about it, but was any administration ready for it? I mean, we go back and we talk about the lack of preparations when it comes to equipment from the Obama administration. We talk about not stockpiling ourselves during the Trump administration. So let's talk about that. How can we recognize those dangers for the future as opposed to ignoring them? So we'll talk to her about her book coming up too. And lots to also get to. And unfortunately, I was going to start the show talking about the SpaceX launch. Oh, what a sad thing. This whole SpaceX launch would have been such a cool thing to watch. I was sitting on my couch, and I was streaming the SpaceX coverage, and I was really learning a few things. It was fascinating to watch them go into the capsule And you can learn a few things or two when you watch SpaceX do these, as opposed to watching a major news network. So you could just watch the feed off of NBC or something like that, and you can see them sitting there waiting to go up. But the experts would talk about this or that, or who knows if they try to politicize it. I really appreciate the SpaceX feed for little details that you learn a few things. So they're trying to get into the capsule. And if you've ever seen these things, it kind of looks like a beaker, like in science class. So it's kind of like pyramid-shaped, but then there's a little bottleneck on the top. You probably have seen it during the Apollo missions. You're pretty familiar with that type of shape that the astronauts use to transport themselves, and they sit on top of these giant rockets and things. So the astronauts are going in, and they have some of the crew helping them get through this small hatch so they can get in, turn around, and sit down and strap themselves in and make sure they're all safe for the rocket launch. And the SpaceX commentator said the reason that they're holding they have people up there actually holding their heads is not necessarily to stop them from bumping their heads, but they want to make sure they don't accidentally knock a seal, you know, some of the weatherproofing and the seal that would go around the door. They don't want to accidentally knock that, because that would be pretty devastating if a seal got loose and then depressurized or something happened. So I was watching and listening to this, and I thought, wow, these people know every single detail of what goes on in the SpaceX launch. This is why I watch their coverage and not the news networks. News networks can go and try to politicize it all day, blah, 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 blah. But you can actually watch the experts talk about it. I was so enthralled to learn from them. And you'll get a second chance on Saturday, because unfortunately, the weather conditions weren't all that great. If you saw the video of it, it looked kind of cloudy, but they were saying that it had to do something with the electric charge in the air was at a certain level, and it wasn't safe for them to go up. And of course, safety is a pretty big deal. So the SpaceX launch said, we're going to try this again for Saturday. It's going to try to launch at 3:22 Eastern, which is 2:22 Central here. And hopefully you'll get the opportunity to watch this. If it doesn't work out, they're going to push it back to Sunday. But let's hope they get a chance to put it up on Saturday. Elon Musk, there was an article from Business Insider, said he appeared choked up while discussing his responsibility for the lives of the two NASA astronauts, including one that was right here from the St. Louis region in St. Anne. Grew up, went to school in St. Anne, the Pattonville district. He went to Wash U. There was articles that said when he was growing up and studying that he wanted to become an astronaut. Look at him now. He's going to be launching into space, and how historic this launch is. You think about a private company working with NASA. That would have been unheard of. Never in a million years would you have thought that was possible, unless someone like an Elon Musk comes up and changes the game for it all. So he is now waiting for Saturday, and they go through, and this was kind of a nice run for them, right? It was almost like a dry run to make sure everything was okay and get the feel for it. And it was cool to see all the computer screens up there and the way that SpaceX as a company handles it. I'm really excited for it on Saturday, and I hope that you get an opportunity to watch it too, just like I'm sure hundreds, if not millions of other people will. Yeah, when I was streaming, there was maybe a 500,000 people that were watching just on the SpaceX page. I'm sure there were much, much more watching from other avenues. All right, so a couple of clips I want to get to, some from Dr. Fauci. Also, something to watch out on social media. President Trump said he's going to sign an executive order on social media Thursday, according to the White House. We'll talk about that coming up, too. And again, Jim Rosenberger is joining us, the author of Revolver. It's a biography of Sam Colt. Very interesting life Sam Colt lived in, the six shooter. What a influential weapon here in the United States. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Get home fast and informed. Total Information PM starts weekdays at 4 on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX and KMOX.com.
And Overnight America continues, and we're going to talk about Sam Colt, the legacy of that very historic weapons maker, I guess the six shooter that changed America. Revolver is the name of the biography, and he's going to be joining us, Jim Rosenberger, in about 10-15 minutes from now. So that'll be pretty neat. A few things I want to get to. Dr. Fauci, you don't get to see as much as him, Dr. Birx, Vice President Pence, things like that, because after they stopped doing the daily press conferences, I mean, for a couple of months, they were doing it every single day. You would come out and you'd see some new information. They would try to come out and President Trump would say a few things, maybe speak for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then take about 40 minutes worth of questions from the press. Sometimes these things would go 2 hours, depending on how many other people were there. You know, some other people would come out and talk. You'd see Dr. Birx, Dr. Fauci, Vice President Pence, but anyone else, sometimes special guests, things like that. And ever since they stopped doing that, I think the reason they stopped doing it is because there wasn't necessarily a warranted 2 hours that needed to be dedicated to saying exactly the same things. I think after we got a pretty good handle on what was going on and we were getting to the point where we were going to reopen, and that kind of triggered stepping back and not doing it daily. So you might do it weekly or biweekly. So you saw one from yesterday. There was a press conference. And then, of course, there's the press secretary that has been coming out and talking on behalf of the White House. So that adds a little bit extra to fill in some of the other questions that reporters may have. So Dr. Fauci, when he actually gets on, he said a couple of different things. He's spoken on Missouri and what went on at the Lakes of the Ozarks and things. But here's a few things that he mentioned that I thought was kind of interesting. Should schools be in person this fall? There's been some debate to this, but there's also been some debate internally, I believe, because at first Dr. Fauci said that he foresees we'd be able to reopen, and then he foresees that there might be difficulty reopen, and now you got to tread lightly, but now it'll be okay. There's kind of been some wavering as more information comes in, and here's what his latest is on that.
The answer to that, I think, falls under the category of we can't say that one size fits all. And when people ask questions about what you can and cannot do, you always have to talk about what the dynamics of the outbreak are in the area that you're talking about. Because we live in a big country, and there are certain states, cities, regions, counties, in which the level of infection is at a rate that the schools can be much more flexible in how they open. Whereas in other areas, it may be that it is really quite risky. And I think what the regions have to do under the leadership of the local regions, with some guidance from the federal government, is to take a look at what the dynamics of the outbreak are and to make your recommendations, be it at a college or a high school or even an elementary school level. There needs to be flexibility, but judgment according to the situation on the ground.
There needs to be flexibility, but judgment. And that's the big key right now, because some people have a little bit different understandings of where that line and where that judgment should fall into place. So there are areas that are very hesitant to try to reopen things and some that are more open to getting the schools back in place. Texas, for example, they're ready to get things going. And they have always been up there and a little bit more progressive when it comes to reopening and allowing these things to go a little bit further. Then there's some areas that just foresee, like what, Los Angeles. And you look at some of these other large areas, oh, we just might stay closed down for another year. You know, they throw these kind of things around. So that could be dangerous on the other aspect, the other side of things. And then Dr. Fauci comes out and he doesn't really give an answer. Can you blame him, though? What he says is essentially, we need to have great discretion on every local district. Okay, I get it. And that's the way it should be, really. I think most areas should be able to decide these things. I am really confident that locally here in the city and the county, and really pretty much anywhere in the state of Missouri, you're going to see schools open in the fall. I think it's going to be necessary for them to open in the fall. I think that most people are going to be ready for this, and I feel we're going to have a lot in the way of businesses opening and us living our summer lives, that we're going to feel more comfortable doing it. And I also believe more information that we get, we're going to find that those in that age range that are attending school are going to be so less at the risk pool. It's so minimal that we're going to feel even more comfortable that we're going to be able to either help contain or treat or whatever that comes up if there's any other auxiliary outbreaks for it. You know, and part of this, too, you saw the new statistic come out, and I think it was the CDC, but the newest statistic when they start to break down the problems that we have with tracking the COVID-19, you have the issues such as the age levels. You have the issues of the way that they've been documented. And one of the biggest issues that we do have is that for the longest time, if COVID-19 was one of the symptoms that was exhibited in a death, that it was marked as a COVID-19 death. So you have to be able to look at the data and break it apart and say, was COVID-19 a contributor? But what was the leading cause of death here? And I think that's so important because we have to be honest in the way that we approach this thing. And that is matched up with the latest number. And the latest number is about 46% of all COVID-19 deaths occurred in nursing homes. We're approaching 50%. What does that indicate to you? Well, of course, there's workers inside of those nursing homes and other nurses that are involved. But there's also those that are most vulnerable, which is those at a higher age that may be suffering and have other health ailments. And because of that, those other health ailments that their body is already trying to fight, dedicating all of their immune system or whatever it may be in their body trying to kick that or at least survive, you throw something on top of that as serious as the coronavirus, it's just overwhelming. And it's so difficult for some people at really 60 and above, 70 above, 80 and above. But by the time we go back and look at the numbers, if we find out that 50% of all of the deaths from COVID-19 were inside of a nursing home, and then we can say, I don't know, 95% of the deaths were over the age of 40 or whatever that number is, I think we can look at this and say, all right, we're getting a much better picture of that. We're more confident that we can open up and we're going to be able to fight this thing, because now we know where the most attention needs to be held. And if something does happen, we know the right way to treat it, because we've had a couple of more months of experience with this thing. Dr. Fauci, what about when it comes to vaccines? That's going to be the next big question.
It is possible, but when you're dealing with vaccines, you've got to remember that you're dealing with things that have a lot of vicissitudes. There are a lot of landmines and hiccups that occur. But the kind of acceleration that we're doing, which I must emphasize, is not at the expense of safety, nor at the expense of scientific integrity. What we're doing is that we're proceeding what we call at risk. And at risk, Jim, means that you take the next step before you have the results of the previous step. And the next step is an investment in resources, such as making vaccine before you have a clear-cut signal that it works. That means if it does work, you've gained a few months. If it doesn't, you've lost an investment of resources. You haven't put anyone at risk. Mm-hmm. You haven't, you know, modified the integrity of the study. If we do that, you might remember when we first started the phase one trial and when we first developed the vaccine, I said it would be about a year to a year and a half, and that was in January. So a year from January is December. I still think that we have a good chance, if all the things fall in the right place, that we might have a vaccine that would be deployable by the end of the year.
Wow. This is lightning fast. I mean, lightning fast. It's amazing the things you can get done in government when there is a necessity to it. And honestly, have you ever seen government work so fast to get anything done ever in your lifetime? Never happens. Now, on the medical side, that's the same thing. This is my concern about the vaccine. My concern is that in the necessity of trying to find this as fast as possible, that the same level of quality or scrutiny that would normally be put forth in front of a vaccine is kind of relaxed. So making sure that what we're getting is actually safe, it's going to be utmost important that we have reassurances and guarantees with this thing that we're not getting something that was pushed through with corners cut. That's going to be so important, because you're already going to have some people not trusting it properly. One more thing from Dr. Fauci on wearing a mask.
I do it when I'm in the public for the reasons that, A, I want to protect myself and protect others, and also because I want to make it be a symbol for people to see that that's the kind of thing you should be doing.
Make it a symbol. You know, it's kind of fascinating, right? It needs to be a symbol. It's more symbolic. And I'm wondering if that's the wrong word to use if you're trying to advocate for this. It's more symbolic. Well, it is something that I think most people carry around anymore. You know, I don't go out enough or that often. I keep one in the car, and if it's necessary for me to wear it when I go into somewhere, I'll wear it. But if it's not necessary, I just don't. You see how MSNBC got caught with their reporter criticizing people for not wearing a mask? Let me just play this real quick. I thought this was funny. So I think it was Katie Turr was the news anchor, if you want to call her a news anchor, but she was the host on MSNBC at the time. Listen to how she got called out and how they got called out by a passerby when this happened. Talk about masks.
So are the people there just not worried about it, Cal? Are they not worried about their own personal safety? I haven't met anybody who is. I met some folks actually from Lake Geneva who lived in the area. They were staying a few miles outside of town where I were. And they said they're worried about it. They're worried about that second spike. They're worried about folks coming in from Chicago. But they'll quickly add, at the same time, this is a place that relies on that business. I think people here want a little bit more funding when it comes to these programs so that they could stay closed. But again, I think people felt like the Supreme Court made the decision here in Wisconsin that it was time to open up. But you can see here, just around, nobody's wearing them.
No- All right, so this is what they do. The news reporter from MSNBC is standing in front of the camera. Behind them are three people of the crew. One's a cameraman, another person has some other gadgets, and there's someone else standing around. Who knows what that person's doing? But they say, okay, here, look, turn around. Look, here's one person that's not wearing a mask. Listen to what he says to them.
But you can see here, just around. Nobody's wearing them. Nobody's
cameraman.
There you go, including the cameraman. Yeah. Katie.
After crew's not wearing them.
Striking images. Cal Perry. Cal, thank
you. All right, so did you hear that? I had to amplify the noise a little bit. So he said, he tried to shame this guy. Hey, look, no one's wearing a mask. You know what the guy says? Your camera crew's not wearing masks. Look at them. You're out here talking about how dangerous it is and trying to shame these people because they're walking around outdoors without a mask. How dare they? And then he said, your crew's not wearing a mask. He points it and shoves it right back into them. I thought that was great. All right, coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about Sam Colt, a new biography called Revolver, and Jim Rossenberger, the author, joins us on Overnight America KMOX.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
It's a new book that's out now called Revolver, Sam Colt in the Six Shooter That Changed America, and author Jim Rossenberger. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
What a interesting topic. So from what I understand, there hasn't been too many biographies about Sam Colt, and I'm very surprised because I think he's a universally known name in the United States.
I agree. I was surprised and delighted when I realized that no one had done the book because it's just filled with great, rich material. He lived a very interesting sort of topsy-turvy life. And, of course, his revolver changed the country in some pretty fundamental ways. So there's a lot there.
I think you can watch any movie or any television Western, and it's impossible to get around the Six Shooter. And you look back at it and all, and it's hard to believe that, you know, there was a time when that wasn't a thing. So maybe we can go back and talk about Sam Colt and what really led to him inventing that.
Yeah, so when you go back before Colt, you have to remember that there were good guns, accurate, powerful guns, but they were single-shot guns, meaning that they had to be reloaded after every shot. And This meant putting powder down the barrel, putting a projectile in, a ball, stuffing it all down with a rod. And even for a really good shooter, a very experienced hand, that took at least half a minute to do that. So, you know, these were good guns. The problem was if you needed a gun where you wanted it to fire more than once. So a lot of people have been trying to come up with some way of doing this. I mean, even Leonardo da Vinci had a plan for a multi-firing weapon. Huh. But it wasn't until Sam Colt that the first practical multi-firing gun came about. And incredibly, he invented it when he was just 16 years old.
Wow, 16! He was already thinking about this sort of thing. And it's hard to believe, too, that the history of this thing and the way that it is just weaved into American history, the way that it's been used, the demand of this thing, it sounded like pretty much anywhere you went out west, this thing was like a hot commodity.
It was. You can see that in the prices of guns. In the East, you could get a Colt revolver for somewhere between $25 and $36, depending on the caliber. But out west, the guns went for $200, $250. Even during the gold rush in California, revolvers would go for as much as $500, an extraordinary sum of money. But it gives you some sense of how important having a gun like this was out west. So I write about why that was so important, particularly when you had people, you know, leaving the East, going beyond the Mississippi River into Missouri and then beyond. And for the first time, meeting Native Americans who were on horseback, who could travel fast, who could fire arrows at a rate of 20 or 30 a minute. So you can see why somebody going out into that world would want a gun where they could respond with their own rapid fire weapon. And of course, they had to confront each other, too. I mean, there was lawlessness out there and a lot of greed. So the prudent thing to do was to take a Colt revolver with you.
Mm. You go back to the 1830s and when this was actually patented. I'm curious, have you ever held or have seen personally some of the early six shooters?
I have. Fortunately for people like me, there are collectors who collect these. And I've seen a few of these collections and they are amazing. I mean, I'm not a gun owner myself, but these are, I'm telling you, even if you don't think, even my wife, who doesn't like guns at all, said, I want one of those because they're they're beautiful objects, very cool looking. And there are auctions. You can go on auction sites, and some of them, the most well-known ones, go for over $1 million. So people prize these things.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of these. What is that one? Pawn Stars. You know, someone brings it in, and they got to bring the experts in to come evaluate and see if it's something that was a remake or not. And that's always exciting, too, because there's probably a lot of knockoffs out there, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the problem. The Italians typically make very good knockoffs. But I think the one you're talking about was a Colt Walker, and this was really the gun that made Sam Colt famous. He had I said, you know, he invented it when he was 16. He then went around the country seling hits of nitrous oxide to raise money. He would go into towns everywhere. I mean, he went up the Mississippi River. He went just about everywhere. He'd go into a town. He'd run out of hall, put in an ad in the newspaper, and then he would invite audiences for 25 cents or 50 cents apiece, and then he would get them high on nitrous oxide. That's how he made his money. So then by his late teens, he had enough to start making his first model into a kind of real prototype that he could patent, has his first factory at the age of 21. He's rich, he's living large, and then the whole thing goes bust. And he's kind of broke for about 8 years. And then a Texas Ranger named Sam Walker really put him back in business. And that's where you get the Colt Walker. It was sort of a partnership between Sam Colt and Sam Walker coming up with this absolutely enormous pistol. It was about 15 inches long, weighed about 5 pounds. And that put him in business.
It's a peacekeeper right there. So wait, is the nitrous oxide, is that like the laughing gas?
That's the laughing gas. That's right. Colt started this when he was 17 years old. And this happened to be in the middle of, interestingly, a pandemic. It was a cholera pandemic hit America. And Colt's solution to this was to travel around the country making people laugh. He made enough money that he really could. It was sort of his R&D money, you know. And by the end of it, he had models where he could go to Washington, D.C. and get himself a patent.
Wow, that's amazing. Jim Rosenberger is the author of Revolver Sam Colt and the Six Shooter That Changed America. It really did change America, because after that, it probably opened this idea to a lot of other manufacturers and different gun makers. I'm curious about Sam Colt in general. Did he have any experience making weapons before then, or was this his very first weapon?
His first weapon. He liked to cause explosions. So he had experience with it. In fact, he'd gotten thrown out of school because he fired a cannon celebrating the 4th of July. That's how he ended up. He got thrown out of school when he was 15, ended up on a ship to India as a sailor, and it was on that ship that he invented the revolver and literally carved his first model out of pieces of scrap wood on that ship. But probably the most important part of his youth that led to him inventing this gun was where he grew up. That was in Hartford, Connecticut, right in the middle of the Connecticut River Valley, which is where all the big gun factories were at the time. You know, Springfield Armory, you had other important gun factories. And so he grew up knowing about guns, not just as things you take out to go hunting with, but as things to be manufactured and to be improved. So yeah, he had more know-how than your average young American in the early 1800s.
You know, I wonder, because in our industry in radio, I've met some people that work from home, and of course a lot of us do now, but different voice talent or different radio personalities, and for the longest time, they had these ISDN lines. They were extremely expensive. It cost like, I don't know, $1,000 a month to, you know, to keep these things. But when I asked someone, why would you install one of these and pay that much money? Are you? And they said, well, this is what separates the big talent from the small talent. This is like the who's who when it comes to voice talent, or it comes to people that are working from home and doing shows from home. So was this Six Shooter, was this the like who's who of weapons back in the day? If you had one of these, it meant you were one of the big dogs?
Yes, it was. I think really what it meant, by the time the sort of the 1840s came along and the big migration out west, you know, leaving a lot of it from St. Louis, it was considered necessary to have one of these. And I have some quotes in the book from people who went out west, and they noted that everybody had a Colt revolver who could get one. I mean, the problem is they were kind of hard to get at first until Colt started manufacturing many of them. But absolutely, it was something where, I mean, in fact, interesting quotes from people in Missouri, sort of just about to begin the journey west, commenting on how they need to get themselves a Colt revolver. Because I think everybody understood that this was the weapon to have before you headed west.
You know, I want to talk more about that. Do you mind holding on after the break?
I'd love to, yeah.
Yeah, so the book is called Revolver. It's out now, just came out. You can find it on Amazon, and I was looking, and I always like to see if it's trending on Amazon, and you are trending in a couple of different categories, in the top 10 and top 15. So this is awesome that we have author Jim Rosenberger joining us. And again, the book Revolver, Sam Colt and the Six Shooter That Changed America. We'll continue our conversation next on Overnight America KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Jim Rosenberger is the author of a book called Revolver, which is out now. Just came out. Sam Colt and the Six Shooter That Changed America. Jim, thank you again for sticking around. I'm having a great time learning about Sam Colt.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I wanted to talk more about this area because you mentioned Missouri a few times, and here in St. Louis, we know that there's a rich history on the riverfront. We know because of the Mississippi. Of course, there's the commerce aspect of it. St. Louis was a large area. And on top of that, it was really the launching point for exploration if you go back to Lewis and Clark and whatnot. So you talked about Missouri and some. What made this a unique place for the Six Shooter and when it came to Sam Colt moving it forward?
Well, that's a great question. You know, it's interesting. Colt, I mentioned when he was selling nitrous oxide, and I managed to trace the journey that he took around the country and found out that he took a ship from Virginia down around Florida to New Orleans, and then went up the Mississippi River in 1833. And I think about that journey a lot, because as he's going up the river, if he looks west, Arkansas is a territory. Missouri had been a state since 1821. But really, most of the population in Missouri was hugging the river. Mm-hmm. When you went further west than that, no one really knew what was out there in 1833. And Missouri was the beginning of the West for most Americans. You know, most of them went through Missouri. In fact, most of them went through St. Louis. And so, you know, people would, the revolver was particularly important in St. Louis. And I'll tell you another interesting thing about St. Louis, mm-hmm. which I discovered, is Sam Colt's brother James lived in St. Louis. He was an attorney there. Mm-hmm. And he got, he wrote a letter to Sam saying, you know, that St. Louis is filled with, I don't have the quote in front of me, but basically with all sorts of ruffians, don't come out here. It's a dangerous place. And then James went and got himself shot in a duel as if to prove his point. So it was a rough, Missouri was a rough place there because you had a lot of people funneling through on their way out west. And, you know, some of them were going out there because they were families that wanted to go out to Oregon and start a new farm. But a lot of them wanted to just get out there because they wanted gold, or they wanted, you know, it was more driven by greed than anything else. And the revolver mixed into this in ways both interesting and violent, you know, a lot of gunfire. So, you know, your state was a dangerous place to be for a while there.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. A lawyer's getting in duels and things. I think it's called Blood Island. There's a very specific place where a lot of duels happen. And there was one historic instance where Abraham Lincoln, you know, before he was president, of course, was challenged to a duel. And it was going to take place on, I think it was called Blood Island. I mean, it's, you can't really travel much there anymore. And it's funny because if you challenge someone, the person that gets challenged gets to pick the weapon of choice. So instead of picking a gun or anything like that, he picked, was it broadsword or blunt object or something? But you got to remember, Lincoln had a long reach on him. So as soon as that was said, the person backed down.
Right.
You're not going to outreach Abe Lincoln.
James thought it was pistols, dueling pistols. And he had apparently slept with the wife of a townsperson who then challenged him to a duel. So it was a very messy business. But it was one of the reasons why the name Colt was in the news all the time in the 1840s, because of Colt's gun, but also because of James Colt getting into this rather infamous duel in St. Louis. And then another brother named John committed a very infamous axe murder in New York City in 1841. He killed a man with an axe, and then he trussed him up, put him in a pine box, and put him on a ship bound for, of all places, St. Louis. So the Colt name, and this became a very famous case, sort of the trial of the century for a while. So the Colt name was infamous before it became famous, before it became a kind of a brand name.
You know, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I think they still manufacture Colts today. Is it still in the family name, or was there a point where it was sold and the naming rights was sold?
The Colt family does not control it anymore, but the Colt manufacturing still exists, still in Hartford, Connecticut, still producing guns. Kind of amazing. It's been in business in one form or another since 1836, in its current form, really, since the 1850s. So kind of remarkable.
So you have Google Alerts set up in case one of these go up for auction. You're going to try to put a bid in?
Yeah, I got to make a little more money first, though. I mean, I just was looking at an auction catalog, and they're expensive. I mean, you can get a nice, you know, a sort of 1851 or 1860. You can get them in the below $10,000. But anything with provenance or the Colt Walker that I mentioned, those are going to set you back a little bit. So most people get replicas of them. The Italians make very good replicas of Colts, almost exactly the same. A friend of mine gave me a replica of an 1851 Colt Navy, but it's 47% the size of the actual gun. So it's like a small little gun, but it's really cool because it's exactly the same pieces. If you took it apart, every single piece would be the same as in the original.
Yeah. Isn't that something? Well, your book is out now. It just came out, Revolver, Sam Colt and the Six Shooter That Changed America. I know a lot of people are still somewhat hesitant, and not a lot of places actually have their bookstores open yet. So if someone wanted to find this for themselves, where would you like them to go?
Well, of course, they can go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble. If they go to my website, jimrasenberger.com, I've got links to places to buy the book. And, of course, when these bookstores open, we should all visit them. They're wonderful places, and they're going to need our business. So any of the above would work.
I'm going to start going online, too. I want to see more photos of this. You know, during the break, I'm going to get in trouble. I'll lose track of time just going down the rabbit hole of these photos, which is so neat. In the book Revolver, Sam Colt in the Six Shooter That Changed America. And like I mentioned, congratulations. I went on to Amazon, number one new release in a couple of different categories. That's excellent to see. It's very exciting.
It's very exciting, yes. Yeah. So we're just getting going, but people seem to like it.
And I think people like the history aspect of it. I think people recognize the name Colt and they know exactly what it's associated with. And it's really amazing that it took this long for someone to realize that this would be a good thing to document this part of American history. So, Jim Rosenberger, thank you so much for coming on and sharing time with us tonight on Overnight America.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line. And you have to go see this. I got to say, I'm a fan of artwork. The front cover of Revolver, beautiful artwork. I mean, beautiful artwork. It just puts you right exactly in the mood to take you back into the 1800s and get a feel for this. I'm sure there's someone listening right now that have seen some of the original Six Shooters and were just awed by it. And then you passed out. And then when you came to, you realized what just happened. You got up, you looked at it again, passed out again from excitement. And then you made your way to again. Then you got to appreciate it for what it is. All right, coming up in the next hour, we're going to take a look at your news, CBS News, and also Alex Degman. And Gene Sperling's going to join us, a former director of the National Economic Council under both President Obama and President Clinton. New book called Economic Dignity. What exactly does that mean? And what is some of Gene's recommendations? We're going to connect with him coming up. And also Michelle Walker, author of The Gray Rhino. Big hour next hour on Overnight America. Join us on Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio. This is KMOX.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.